Hello and welcome to Growing Up B2B. I'm Ed D'Elia, president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. For over 60 years, and now across two generations, we've been helping B2B companies achieve next-level growth through brand distinction, quality lead generation, and sales enablement. Growing Up B2B was created for family business leaders who are passionate about growth, legacy, and making a lasting impact. Whether it's a multi-generational legacy or multiple family members working together, there's something truly magical about blending business with family. And we want to celebrate that right here on Growing Up B2B. So be sure to stick around to the end of the show and find out how you can be our next guest. Okay, let's get into it. Hello and welcome to another episode of Growing Up B2B. I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. Today's guest has one of the most entrepreneurial stories we've featured yet, starting with a college software project that became a campus-wide platform and eventually led to his first exit before he even finished grad school. Today, we're speaking with Vadim Shalmaniev, the CEO of Invar Technologies, a managed IT services firm that traces its roots back to his parents. His mother introduced the family to software, and his father, once a mechanic, retrained as a developer and helped launch the business in 2003. Since then, Vadim has taken Invar from a side project to a full-service IT provider, growing the firm into a strategic technology partner for organizations across multiple industries, all while working alongside his dad, who still leads the software development side of the business today. Vadim, welcome to Growing Up B2B. Excited to speak with you.
Yeah, looking forward to this conversation, Ed. Thank you for the invitation, and pretty excited for the chat.
Same here. So let's start with the name. Invar is both a metal that doesn't bend under pressure and a combination of your family's initials. What was the vision when your family first founded the company and picked that name?
Very interesting. It was just to be something that was in our heart and our spirit. Like, we weren't even thinking about it. It's funny enough, we didn't even Google what we had come up with or look for the meaning of the word until much, much later, actually. A couple of years in, did we not only find out what kind of alloy this is and that it actually stands for something more than what we just made out of it. And it was... So it was fun making it, and we kind of just went with it, and here we are.
So, but it was really coming from the heart, not from the metal.
Right? No, not at all. Not at all. Yeah, we haven't, but once we put it all together and registered it, and it went on, and created the email address for it, and then only then later, it was a little later, right? Because this was 2003. Google was just kind of come about, and it wasn't like everybody was Googling themselves all the time. It's way later. Yeah. It was like, hey, let's Google it for yourself. And we're like, yeah, let me Google what this is and how we learned this.
So your dad learned software development at night while working a day job, and your mom kind of helped him get started. And it's kind of a neat origin story. What impact did that have on you as you were younger growing up? You were watching your dad kind of work a job and then at night learning software, your mom kind of at his side, kind of learning, and I believe she was fairly immersed in technology. So talk about that impact as you were growing up.
Yeah, we immigrated to New York when I was about 11. And really my dad kind of started into it. He right away knew that, he didn't really see himself as a mechanic for mm-hmm. the rest of his life. And one of the first jobs that he got was actually a doorman at a building. And okay. You say a day job, but really it was a night job. So he had the night shift during which it gave him an opportunity to basically, wasn't a lot of action going on, but he had to be there through the night, and he basically started reading software development books, and basically he actually learned English and software development at the same time.
Oh my God.
Because, immigrant here, he had no English, and he basically just had to do it on the fly, and He's like, what better way to do it is by start reading books and basically. And I saw the Valve and it showed me that hard work pays off. And he would do this day in and day out, and then shortly, a few years in, he was able to start doing things. He was able to buy his first car. He's never owned a car up to that point, and he was able to buy his first car by leveraging the word that study, kind of like the core of his ability to c continuously do this in and day out. And I think I take that with me now. Typically, a challenge is not really a challenge unless you have to put a bunch of hours into it, and that's kind of how I kind of go from there. That's what I've learned.
Nice.
Hard
So
work.
your first project showed up in college with, I believe it was called ProTrack, right?
It was, yes.
So that was a proposal tracking system you built for your university. So talk a little bit about that. How did that come together, and what did it feel like when NYU approached you and said, "Hey, we want to acquire this platform?"
It was mind-boggling, to say the minimum. No idea that this is where it was going to go, and it was completely based on intuition. The way I even got into it was, I was just walking around the hallways of the University of Polytechnic at the time, and as a sophomore, I think, or junior of the, and I was like, listen, I kind of want a job. I think that it's time to, and I was already worried, right? One of my passions is driving in exotic cars, but so I started as a valet attendant, but it only gets you so far because you're working through the nights, through the rain, whatever it takes, you have to do it. And I was like, I think I had fun, for a couple of years doing that, and I think I needed something else. And so, yeah, I just kind of walked into academic affairs office out of all, and I asked for a job, and it just happened to be that they had one. And that's where basically I was put in to start working Excel sheets. And I was like, listen, guys, this is, you're a technical school. Like, why are we doing all this by hand? This is just doesn't make any sense. And I don't know, it was from other sources where it's a, the manager at the time, Michael Cletus, I remember him, we're still friends. He goes to me as like, hey, you have I have a budget. I mean, we could do let's do something better here. And I was given that opportunity, and I just kind of jumped right into it. And we designed it, architected it, and had it developed. I obviously wasn't a great developer, just kind of the first couple of years in college, just barely even touching the software development. But I understood it enough to understand that this goes here and that connects to that, and here's, I understood the business concept of it more. And then we kind of evolved it, and we're like, whoa, this is, the all the department heads was very surprised to see it, and they were excited to start using it because it really created structure and foundation for them, which was always like, flying by night, like kind of figuring out how to submit these grants and bids. And then it was just wild when NYU came to us and said, hey, like, this is, we have something similar, but you guys have 60% more than what we have. And since we're acquiring the university anyway, we might as well get you get this in, combine it together with our software. And it was just completely different world. They kind of made us show them the environment. They kind of showed us at that time they were leading kind of the infrastructure game in between the different universities. And so, like, we were able to like host it with them. They had to switch it over to their host and such. And yeah, it was very exciting times, and definitely nothing I've ever expected at that time, at least.
Yeah, I mean, especially just at that time in your life, at that age, it must have felt wild, like a wild ride, right? I mean, that's
Yeah, it was, I was just like, hey, like, what party do I go to? And then, NYU was like sitting down with the dean of the university is like, hey, walk me through this, please. I was like, all right.
So after, we'll just call that your first exit. That was an early exit, right? I suppose you could have gone in a few directions, but you elected to go the path of Invar at that point, right?
Yes. Well, Invar was evolving, right? Invar was, before that project, Invar was basically just a consulting arm for both of my parents to do their consultant work, right? So they could get paid corp to corp, and the guys across the table wouldn't have to pay any taxes for them. So it kind of that's how it started. But at that point, I did have a pivoting decision to make and said, okay, do I kind of a continue in the software direction, or do I do something else? And it could just kind of happen again on for me, I almost feel like, because I was presented an option to kind of, hey, like, we need help with some of these computers that we have at a friend's medical office. And I'm like, all right, cool. I like this kind of stuff too, because I was very hands-on with computers, and like I built them and kind of was playing around with them as a kid at that time. And I was like, all right, I could probably do this as well. And they kind of like moved me in that direction. So at that moment, I started helping various medical facilities to set up their local networks and set up their computers and kind of be the IT guy on site. So I would kind of run around the medical facilities around Brooklyn and Queens and Manhattan, kind of just help folks out to get their stuff together. And
Wow. So some young kids they tinker with Legos. You were tinkering with building computers at a young age.
indeed.
So is it safe to say then that you had an affinity for technology at a fairly young age? Like was that
I think so. I think I realized that really technology can solve real challenges. It was early on, because it gave me almost like, you say Legos, and Legos are great, and you could, follow the instructions that provided to build something that you could then you could first visualize and kind of see it. Here, I was able to build things that had no prescription for, and I got a lot of satisfaction from that, and I was able to kind of say, well, give me the challenges. I love to hear the and that's kind of my appreciation for business became a reality. I said I really want to see, kind of hear and understand technology, business challenges, and then find how technology can really make a big difference for them.
Nice. So you'd once described your father as a very brilliant man, but somewhat, I'll say, risk averse, and yourself as a bit more, I'll just say, entrepreneurial, kind of seeing signs of that early on. How, as you kind of stepped into Invar, how did that dynamic play out where he was a bit risk averse, you were one that was inclined to, say, take some calculated risks or boldly go, or at least say, hey, we can come up with a solve for this. How did that balance itself out when the two of you started kind of working together in the business?
I think it was something special. I hear a lot of people saying, I can't possibly work with my family. I can't, this problem, that problem. They don't talk to me right. They don't respect me. I don't think we ha ever had that level of issues. I think that there was a clear understanding that he was kind of behind me cautiously, saying, okay, go, but make sure you kind of get, check yourself before you cross the street, so to speak, right? You're looking both directions. And, we've got into trouble where I've made some wrong bets, and he was there to support me and kind of financially and kind of psychologically to talk through things. But at the same time, he never tried to really try to like curb my like potential or enthusiasm. Like he was always cautious, but never really told me to stop, or never told me to kind of hold. And I really appreciate that because, kind of combining that school of thought of calculating things and kind of still though, like, okay, yes, I understand it. Maybe there's a chance that it's not going to work, but I want to really try it anyway. Let's do it. And kind of having that support and character behind me, it was very special.
That is. And would you say that so it sounds like he brought some balance to you. Would you say that you did the same for him, knowing that he was a very bright man, but somewhat risk averse? Do you think you opened up a little bit of his appetite for risk by virtue of your enthusiasm?
Probably not. But what I did is I think I gave him a channel to do something he wasn't w willing or wanted to do. So I was doing things that he probably wanted to do, but just couldn't let himself do it. And I think that that's where a lot of the support came from, is that I was that channel for him to be able to, well, I can't do it, but at least somebody's doing it, and that really got us far. And I think we're talking to about my father, but my mom was a huge contributor, especially early on, because she was also, and at first she was actually the breadwinner, because she was, she kind of brought the technology aspect and the drive, really, from even before he learned how to become a software engineer, because she was a software engineer first.
Oh, wow.
Finishing mathematical school back in Belarus, Minsk, and kind of bringing that with her, so she was able to get a first job as a software developer first, even with less English, because she kind of just knew the skill. In English, she kind of picked up as work started, and so she helped really, and I think that that's where a lot of my drive comes from, because she was the driver and the push behind a lot of things, and kind of I took that on and led with that.
Sounds like you got not one but two great role models growing up to guide you in the case of yeah, that's true. Your mom was the first out of the gate when it comes to technology. That's pretty cool. So as you started to step into Invar more, you kind of eventually transitioned from sort of the tech builder to the business builder, getting into some things like VoIP and eventually managed IT services. Talk about that transition. How did that evolve?
Again, I think that there's like a superpower that was kind of leading that direction for us. So one of the projects that my father got into was for a door manufacturer at the time in Brooklyn. And he was doing the software development for them, and they had a lot of problems with the infrastructure. The network w was not stable. The under-core technology, the servers weren't performing properly. They had a lot of different crashes. They had a lot of situations. And my father said at the time to the manager, "Hey, like, it's not working out the way you have things going here, right? Like, I could only do so much, but I'm limited by what's happening on the foundational, on the infrastructure side. Can we take a look at that and kind of fix that up?" And he asked him, "Do you have any ideas? How can you do that?" And I was like, "Well, my son just happened to be, going through the, infrastructure school. Like, I was taking the Server 2000, I think, classes at the time, and because it was just that latest technology at the time, or NT, right?" They said, "Hey, why don't we bring him in and see what he thinks?" And basically, that's how I got involved with that organization, who is still our client till this day. We've been with them for over 22 years now,
That's
or they've
awesome.
been with us, whichever way you look at it. That kind of started that, because so I came and I understood that the server was old. We upgraded the server. They said the network was really completely legacy. So I got an opportunity to dive in and like learn hands-on because everything else was theoretical before. So now I learned the hands-on like networking and all of that, and upgraded the network and stabilized the environment. And the next thing became, our phone system. At the time, they were taking a lot of orders. A lot of orders were happening through phone conversation because email was just becoming and fax was secondary and things like that. And they asked me, he's like, "Hey, can you take a look at our phone system?" So I was like, "That's amazing. That's another challenge for me to kind of learn and see what I could do with it." And so I went in pretty deep, and like at the voice over IP technologies was just emerging, and I've tested a bunch of different systems, and we've acquired on the behalf of that company a voice over IP system, and I really learned it. I was the administrator on site all the time, and I was managing it, and I was shortly after able to see how huge of a potential voice over IP it really was. And so that's kind of something I was like, all right, wait. So, and then my entrepreneurial spirit kicks in again, and I'm like, wait, okay, well, this is great. It's working. I handle this, but how do I leverage that for others? And how do I help others able to kind of partake in this? I basically kind of went on and created my own server farm, and started hosting. So I used the same technology in a separate environment, and started hosting voice over IP services, and kind of really spun up a mini voice over IP company that was basically it was we kept the name in the same, so it was Invar that was the entity, and we just kind of now entered into voice over IP services offering.
Now, how did that was that sort of the catalyst from getting into more of a subscription or managed services platform? Was that kind of the what led you that way, Vadim?
So at that point, I learned about this wonderful world of subscription and recurring billing without having to kind of penny pinch for hours and things like that. And that led us to say, okay, well, like, what else can we do on a subscription basis? And I think I would call myself a continuous learner, and I was going into various peer groups and networking and kind of seeing other folks like, hey, like, oh, there's this thing called managed services now also. Like, it's a flat fee and you get all the bells and whistles and stable environment and predictive billing and all of the great value that comes with it. And I was like, hey, this is amazing. I think that there's a great value as a business to a business owner to know the and predict the costs structure for all the functions that the business needs from IT. And so that was our kind of milestone. So it was voice over IP and then managed services that basically got added on into our service offering.
Nice. So there was also a moment where, and you mentioned early on you were helping medical practitioners, medical offices. But there was a point where you experimented with a like a medical tech division, and it
Oh
didn't
yeah, that
quite
was
pan
fun.
out. So talk about that and what that experience taught you looking back.
It was I think it was around the 2008, 2009 time of it was the market had a big dip, as you probably recall, and I had kind of had some hard times where our agreements at the time got clipped a little bit, and the income was shorter than we would have wanted it to be, and so it was a time to kind of reevaluate things and see where things are going. And at the time, there was the government had issued a call something called high tech law, which is basically an effort to digitalize medical facilities or
Yeah,
industry,
I remember
and
that.
the EMRs came into play, right? And there was a big government push to say everybody go out, need to move to an EMR. We want electronic records for all our health, and this is what we need. So at that time, I again, kind of working through the network and kind of here listening to different people. Idea got floated that we're already in a medical facilities. We already had a clientele base, and we're already kind of managing their technology. So this was now next layer is the application. Because that we weren't doing before, so we were just doing infrastructure purely at the time, and this is became a thing. And so I again a passion for helping businesses solve business challenges with technology. We kind of decided to give this a try, and so we've learned some different EMR systems. We kind of went through the process of understanding how to customize them, and we decided to try to offer our consultant services and to our base and to new customers to help them with onboarding the EMR system for their practice.
And why do you think that kind of fell, it sounded like a good idea at the time. It was a needed resource at the time. Why do you think it fell a little short when it came to Invar? Like what do you think why do you think that didn't quite pan out the way you'd hoped?
There's probably a couple of reasons for that. I think looking back, there's every great success story has a couple of failures, and I think I just needed that under my belt. just to maybe say that. But ultimately, the fundamental root cause of that lack of success there was the business model that we've taken on at the time, right? We're just a consultant. We were not the EMR application. We're not a provider providing additional services to them besides the IT that they never wanted to pay for in the first place. we were kind of like in the outside of the zones of kind of value, and we were like, for example, laboratories wanted to provide more value to their to the physician, so they wanted to offer that service, and the EMRs wanted to get paid for their service, and as an application, and who are we? We're just a consultant. So that's kind of where I think we fell short, is that we didn't really have a lot to offer to that particular market.
But I mean, needless to say, the right idea, the need was there, the capability was there. To your point, it was just maybe the not the right, a mismatch in the model,
I believe so. I believe it was the mismatch with the model at the time and the different layers that maybe we didn't understand in full, even at that time. But it was good. We had a good practice. We've again worked hard and learned a lot, and I think we also learned a lot of what not to do and how to be very careful about picking the models. And I think that I'm very grateful that I had that experience, because it really gave me some of the additional foundation and additional viewpoints that I probably would have never had, and would have had to kind of make it up later on in time at some point.
And I think that goes hand in hand with, if you're going to have an entrepreneurial spirit, you're not going to win every time.
Right,
It's just
right, right.
the
I had a couple of other failures that I'm not gonna have to probably
law
to talk about, but there was a couple of other investments that definitely didn't work out. But yeah, I think it's very important to try it. I think that that's where my father's kind of spirit came, and he was the supporter of saying, okay,
averages.
well, yeah, I don't think he knew if it was gonna work or not, but I think that at that time he was the most skeptical of what of what we're doing, and but still kind of said, yeah, give it a try, why not? And
That's great. I mean, it sounds like you have a really a great and obviously things have worked out pretty well for Invar, because here you are today. In fact, I think it was around 2011 where you kind of officially took the CEO role.
yes.
What was kind of the catalyst for that happening in 2011? What was going on at the time that you all decide, okay, it's time for Vadim to step up as CEO.
I kept on adding opportunities, and I kept on adding to a degree some risk to the organizational to the organization. You know, we've already had probably 7, 10 employees at that time, and it was already kind of becoming a real like company, if you would, right? So, and you know, and my dad, with his preference for risk, he was very kind of like very defined in what he was doing, and he was comfortable with it, and I really didn't want to give him risk that he didn't want or want, you know, needed, and financially especially. So I think that the main catalyst for that was to just say, okay, well, because how things are, let me own the risk since I'm kind of running that, and I'm still very grateful for everything you put together, and we've created a very nice financial package for him, which till this day he's still a big part of the organization. However, he doesn't carry any risk with it, and so I've basically we've calculated what the company was worth, and I created a financial plan for me to buy the full company ownership, and basically become the full owner of the company and the CEO at the time.
Excellent, excellent. And your dad still works with you though, right? To this
Yeah,
day.
day in and day out, day in and day out, and he's a great catalyst for our software development team, and our clients love him, and he's really a big component of the team.
And how would you say your now that you're CEO, he's continuing to support in some client relations, some software development. Would you say your roles have evolved, or your relationship has revolved with evolved with your dad over the span of years, or is it kind of solid as it was and hasn't really shifted?
Yeah, I think it's definitely very solid, and super grateful of where things are. It certainly also evolved. I think he's now become to trust me a little bit more. You know, he doesn't challenge me. He's at times more curious now, just kind of, hey, tell me what you're doing, you know, but doesn't kind of say, okay, well, you shouldn't do that, or kind of like where before he may have, you know, really gave me the kind of warning signs, if you would, and kind of putting the guiding rails in place. Yeah, I think we have, you know, and you know, I think the best times, or the strongest relationship we have, is you know, when we sit at dinner and drink whiskey together, and you know, talk about all the nonsense that happens sometimes day to day, and share kind of some war stories, and yeah, we so that's probably the kind of the best place that we're at right now.
That's great. And it sounds like, and this is very different for different family businesses, but it sounds like, would you, well, let me ask you, would you characterize the relationship with your dad in terms of business and family as fluid? For instance, you could be sitting down talking, at a family meal, but a business topic would come up and that's perfectly okay, or vice versa, in the middle of
Totally.
business and a family topic comes up and that's perfectly okay. Is that the nature of the
Yeah,
relationship?
it's totally just like that, and we could, like, you know, and the family understands and kind of knows where how things are, and so, you know, if we kind of just like, oh, hey, this happened or that happened, and then we kind of go off the tangent and like talk about that, and everybody gives us the space and respect, and kind of gives us the opportunity to have a conversation, and we are respectful of what it is, and you know, we don't want to overtake it, but and I've learned also that it's very important to kind of, like, you know, with my help of my wife, she like gives me a look, and I was like, all right, like, let's take this into a phone call later, and so this way, kind of, we don't bore everybody else around the table, you know, so we have kind of our ways of kind of figuring this out, but yeah, I think it's a very very strong, and kind of helps us. I know that we have a strong foundation together.
Cool. So let's talk about the here and now. As you're looking kind of to the not too distant future, what's exciting you right now, whether it be industries or maybe the face of the clients, how they might be changing? What are some things that are kind of exciting you right now in the industry?
You probably know, but I think AI is just so leading, I'd say, any conversation of the future, or at least it should be. If folks are remotely connected to technology are not talking about AI, they should be, because it's really foundationally changing everything. And so that's really kind of where we are as well. And we're keeping our eye on that. We have as a vision for the technology management firm, I believe there's things that are bigger than just working computers, right? I think that that's a permission to play, right? You have to have a stable environment. You have to have things that work. Sometimes you could have on and off things. Everybody does it. It's totally normal. But 99% of the time, things have to work. And but then what, right? So once you've established that, and kind of like now it's like, okay, well, now what do you do as a value add partner who we look ourselves as to be for our customers? What do you do next? And our vision is has been up to this point been data predictive analytics. So we're kind of really focusing on, now that we have the systems working, and typically the different platforms are talking to each other and connected, what do you do with that? You take the data within those pl pl connected platforms, and now you start to turn it into predictive indicators of next steps, or what the people should be doing within the business to keep solving their challenges and offer, fulfilling their mission. So we basically turned into predictive analytics, dashboarding in a very predictive, actionable way for the businesses. So that was the latest addition to our product mix, our services mix, and we've actually even developed a new platform specifically for some of our customers who happen to be in manufacturing. So we're in a process of spinning up a whole new company called Data Lab for manufacturing, and that is specifically focusing on using data to solve procurement challenges. So for buyers and planners to reduce their admin time. To negotiate better with vendors, to buy better and get better terms. And really, that's where AI comes into play. Is okay, well, so we've kind of created algorithms for data, but now we gotta do even more with that. And this is where we're building AI into those that predetermined data sets, and leveraging the capabilities and analytical skills of AI, and allowing the kind of, we call it a simple add-on AI to exist in business. So we kind of look at ourselves as a catalyst to add practical AI solutions to existing businesses without having to recreate their infrastructure. And that's kind of our vision, is that we are going to be the catalyst to help bring AI into a practical day-to-day help to the organizations that we support.
Awesome. And certainly procurement's just one of many areas in manufacturing that I surmise can be impacted positively with AI and other machine learning. Do you, as you look kind of out to the next 3 to 5 years, do you see the Data Lab model advancing further beyond procurement, or do you think procurement's kind of where you're going to really specialize in?
Yeah, I think that conversation had come up a couple of times, and really, at this time, I really want to become really good at this procurement, because I believe gross margin, or like profit, which is ultimately what most of the companies are for, are out there for, is really starts and really goes about 80 to 90% of the way, from buying properly, buying the best thing you could buy at the best time at the best quantity. And so we're going to become really, really good at helping businesses know what to buy and automating it and streamlining that operation function. Because today's manufacturers are guessing a lot of gut feeling buys, and we're going to systemize it and digitalize it for them. And then we'll add other things to it over time. But I think our main focus is to really get good at for helping the businesses buy the best that they can. And especially in America, you know, I have this special feeling, you know, like I'm an immigrant and I came and I've seen other countries and I've seen kind of like what America has to offer. And I think that it's probably the greatest country, if not very close, in the world, still. And I wanted to make it, you know, better. And one of the ways is to make it self-dependent, and not depend on external, or reduce the dependency on external factors as much as possible. And part of that is to help manufacturers come back to it, to the homeland, if you would, right? And I think that that's what we're helping, is really helping the small SMB businesses get the leverage over other businesses in other countries where labor may be cheaper, but the value is still here. So we're kind of really building that to help the businesses in the simplest and quickest way, by using the
Awesome.
technologies of today.
That's awesome. That's great. And it's going to be an exciting journey to watch as you march forward. That said, let's take one final look back at your journey from kind of observing your parents' hustle and bustle and entree into technology to you yourself exploring in your first software win at a fairly young age to ultimately taking the helm and ownership and leadership of Invar. When you look back, Vadim, what are you most proud of?
Continuous learning.
And you're starting. Okay.
I think that every moment has a specific time in everybody's journey. And good or bad, it's an opportunity to learn and evolve. And I think that I am the proudest of being able to navigate that journey and learn from every interaction. And kind of building myself and the character and people around me. I think we've built an amazing company already. You know, people are happy, and one of our core mission statements is that we want happy employees for happy clients. And that is very important to me. You know, money is great, but lives of people are significantly more important, and I want them to be happy being here, and being with us, and being, you know, having us as a partner on the customer side. So I think that that's one of the biggest things I've learned, and we continue building on that as a foundation to really just do good things for good people.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And last question. If somebody wanted to learn more about you or more about the technologies that Invar provides, what's the best way for them to connect?
I think because we're doing a lot of different businesses and things, so like one of the best ways is, you know, my LinkedIn profile has a lot of the different insights about the different things that we're doing. So that's number one place, and you'll share that in the notes,
I certainly will.
because my last name is pretty long. I'm not gonna share that now, but the idea on the LinkedIn would probably be best. And you know, so on the IT side, it's the company name is Invar Technologies, and our current domain is invar.nyc, as our core is in New York City. However, we are a national provider and servicing about 35 states as of today.
Wow.
And And then on the new on the data lab side, it is the product's name is Procure Smart, and that domain is procuresmart.net. That is our services and a tool for the manufacturers for optimizing procurement process.
Awesome, awesome. Vadim, thank you so much for sharing your journey from student developer to CEO and how family, technology, and entrepreneurship can intersect in powerful and very unexpected ways. Again, we've been speaking with Vadim Shalamanov, CEO of Invar Technologies, a company built on legacy, adaptability, and a true startup spirit. And I'm Ed D'Elia, and this is Growing Up B2B. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you next time. Thanks
Thank
again,
you so
Vadim.
much,
Great
Ed.
having you on.
I
Appreciate
really
it.
appreciate you. Thank you.
Hey, thanks so much for tuning in to Growing Up B2B. To explore more episodes and insights, visit podcast.delianet.com. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating or review on your podcast platform of choice. Having worked with hundreds of family-led businesses across my career, and being a second-generation leader myself, I'm on a mission to help every family business I meet achieve next-level growth for their organization. So feel free also to connect with me on LinkedIn and let's support each other. You can also find out more about my company at delianet.com. Again, I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and thanks so much for joining us today. Take care.